It's Humboldt Holding Up, Humboldt County's most beloved podcast by humans and animals alike. My name is Stephanie McGarry.
And I'm Andrew Goff. Did you ask animals? Did you ask any animals before you just said that?
I think that that's probably a very unfair presumption. I have not asked any animals, including humans, if they actually listen to or like this podcast. So,
well, there might be a few animals that like our podcast a little bit more after this week, because on this week's show, you know, summer's here and the time for making photographable outdoor memories is upon us. And I think that after the year that we just had, I think quite a few people are going to be heading out to frolic in America's second most beautiful county, according to a few years old Washington Post article that we like to make fun of here at Loco. But Stephanie.
Yes, Andrew.
What if I were to tell you that your wilderness wanderings could be significantly more fuzzy than they are? Actually, I have no idea how fuzzy. I don't know what you take on walks with you. But there's a new.
I take nothing fuzzy with me. I have no fuzzies.
Well, that's all going to change now, because there's a new business here in Humboldt County, Luna's Llama Adventures, which is offering Humboldt or anyone really, people the opportunity to hike in our beautiful county along with a llama. Like maybe you just want a llama companion. Maybe you want to, maybe you don't want to carry anything and you're like, I need a friend. A llama will be your friend.
Yes. Well, you could maybe ask your friend to carry your pack for you. Why not have it done by a llama? That just sounds so much more fun. And from what we learned this week, apparently they are excellent companions on traveling.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to Keegan Trisham, who is one of the founders and owners of Luna's Llama Adventures. In fact, let's do that right now.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. Let's do this. So Keegan Trisham, you like llamas.
Yes.
And as such, you have embarked on something, Luna's Llama Adventures. Why don't you just kind of give us an overview of what that is?
Yeah, so Luna's Llama Adventures is a packing company. We train our llamas to pack people's backpacking gear so that they can have access to trails and camps in the backcountry that they wouldn't normally have if they didn't want to haul all of their gear, as well as we do day trips just for walking with llamas and hanging out with them, because they're great to hang out with.
Yeah.
And that's our main service, though we've also been considering doing like birthdays and that sort of thing, and events to bringing llamas be pet and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So we're going to get to all things llamas and the business, but you know, but before we go into any of that, something we like to do is just kind of get people's personal history. So like, tell us about pre-llama Keegan. Like, how does that story go? Where did you come to us from?
I don't really know where to start. I guess I've always loved animals. Ever since I was little, I told my parents I wanted to be a naturalist. And so I initially grew at the end of high school, I had my sights set out to be a landscape architect that does zoo exhibit design. So,
oh, nice.
Because I also like art.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to marry the two together, like building habitats. And so I went to University of Rhode Island with a double major in landscape architecture and wildlife biology. And about 3 years in, I had some health issues and I went back home, and then I did an internship, and it was like the dream internship in San Diego. It was helping design exhibits for the San Diego Zoo.
That seems like it would be the ultimate place to intern for
yes,
that kind
yes,
of
like,
passion.
Yeah, best zoos. Yeah.
Yes. Except I realized that I was kind of miserable, just because part of it was that I realized I'm not really cut out for a office job, at least office all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I also just, a lot of the work is agonizing over like a screw in a bench or that sort of thing. It wasn't what I was imagining.
Right.
And so I realized I just wanted to focus on the animals, and I wanted to be closer to home in California. So I transferred to HSU with just a wildlife degree. And then I fell in love with the redwoods and fell in love with backpacking.
It happens.
And so, yes. And then my parents also got into backpacking. We tried a bunch of different adventures, and that's when we found out about llama packing. We went to the Sierras. So we went to, it was near Yosemite, just like south of Yosemite. And so we only did like a day, an overnight trip, but I just fell in love with llamas. The llamas got to pack our gear and that sort of thing. And I had done mule trains before at like the Grand Canyon. And the llamas were just different. I was like, oh, I wonder why no one has done this in the Humboldt area, because there is, I mean, at least in the Trinity Alps and that sort of thing, there's definitely a lot of backpacking opportunity.
Yeah.
And there aren't really any, even with like mules or any other pack animal, at least that I had seen.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen people pack mules maybe up in the Trinities, but definitely not llamas. So you're breaking ground for this area in that market. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear that there are some people who do it by up in Shasta.
Okay.
They're kind of old. There's like a whole history of the llama business that I've found out about, but yeah.
So you took llamas when you were in the Sierras. Yeah.
Yes.
And so did you kind of like, were you poking around, like asking them like, hey, so how do you do this? What are the ins and outs of this? Like, did it become kind of an exploratory expedition, whether you set out knowing you were going to do that or not?
I didn't ask that much, just because at the time, it was about 2 years ago, I think. At the time, I was just thinking, wow, that would be a cool thing for someone to do. And then that was kind of it. And then my mom was like, oh, you could retire and do that. And I was like, that sounds like a lot of work for after retirement.
Right. Start now.
Yeah. And so, but then it wasn't until about a year ago that I brought it up to a friend, just that it was a crazy idea, or at least I thought of it as crazy. And they were like, why don't you do it? And I was like, whoa. Yeah, why not? Yeah, like, why not at least do the research and see if it's even a plausible thing? And it kind of just went from there, from like research to I just didn't stop.
Wow. And then you just started acquiring llamas? Like how long have you actually been doing the business then? How long has Luna's Llama Adventures been in operation? Not too long.
No, we haven't been in operation very long. So it started with writing business plans, making projections, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I basically was I was basically showing my plans to I was basically looking to private investors and amongst my family and friends, and in order to get some money towards at least acquiring like llamas and that sort of thing. Luckily, it's not a like huge expense. It's not necessarily like starting a restaurant or a tech business.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you just got to get the llamas.
That's what it seemed like at first, and then there's so much equipment involved, but
sure.
It's okay.
Right.
But yeah, so it started out as that, and then we got our first two llamas in February, mm-hmm. and then our next two llamas in April.
And where does one, I feel like we were just both going to ask the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. Where does one acquire a llama when you go, I'm looking for some llamas. Yeah. How do you start? Where does someone start?
Yeah. So Washington and Oregon are like the hubs for llamas in North America.
Okay.
Started out that way because when they were about like 20 or 30 years ago, when llamas first were booming in North America, that's just kind of where the main herds were. That's where people lived. And now they've spread all throughout the US, but that's still where you find probably the most llamas.
Yeah, open spaces, yeah.
Yeah, and then also, there are our specific llamas. We got our first two were from Washington. They were sold together, which llamas are very social and get really nervous without one another. So it was very ideal to get two together that knew each other already. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of show llamas that kind of dropped out of the show program. Just because of like little imperfections that don't really matter for packing. Yeah.
Show llamas. So this is like the same as like dog show kind of show llamas, like llamas that get shown just for being llamas.
They have llama shows. A lot of it is involved for their fleece or their wool.
Okay.
That they produce. Oh,
so it's more like a 4-H kind of thing. Or
it is. Yeah.
Okay.
As well as like their confirmation, how balanced they look and that sort of thing. And so these guys just had little flaws of, you know, one has his butt is kind of higher than his shoulders instead of a flat back or that sort of thing. But they're great llamas. And then we had another one is from a packing business in Nevada. And another is from some a man who does packing in Fresno. And honestly, a lot of the llama community communicates through Facebook. They have Facebook groups. And so I'm in all these llama Facebook groups, and you just kind of say, all right, do you know anyone who has llamas available? Because they are really hard to find. Like sometimes I see people, they put up listings and at the beginning of the day and like 2 hours later, all the llamas are spoken for.
Llamas in high demand.
Wow. Okay.
So I was looking, you know, like at the Luna's Llama Adventure Instagram page, and it struck mm-hmm. me like that it was, you know, it's interesting for my brain to see these animals in like a different setting than you're used to seeing them. You know, like when you see, you know, pictures of llamas, mostly, you know, it's in the Andes mountains, or, you know, they're on farms, but they're usually like behind fences, but like you have, you know, pictures where it looks like you're walking through the redwoods, like, you know, you're on the beach. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it reminded me of, are you familiar with the zebras of Petrolia? Do you know that there's a small herd of zebras in Petrolia, and you know we've posted pictures of them on Loco in the past, and people, you know, are kind of, to me it's like it's really interesting to see an animal like in an environment that like your brain isn't used to seeing it in.
Yes. Yeah. I did not know about the zebras in Petrolia.
Okay, maybe your llamas can meet the zebras someday. But yeah, so I was going to ask, like, where all have you taken these animals here in Humboldt?
These guys, we've taken them to Clam Beach is one of our kind of favorites. So we've gone up to Trinidad. We went up to the Redwoods National Park. And we've gone on the Manila Dunes, Arcata Community Forest, and then down to the Humboldt Redwood State Park.
Okay, yeah. And you have a trailer to haul these around? And
yes, we do.
Yeah, it's a nice trick of the eye, like to see, you know. You don't realize that you've never seen a llama on the beach until you see a picture of a llama on the beach.
Yeah,
I sometimes wonder what they're thinking when they see the ocean.
Yeah, because they're mountain. Their home is high Andes peaks. I remember that I was, me and Stephanie were talking before this about how we've both been to Peru and like seen them in kind of a, I guess you'd say, their natural habitat. Like they have them at Machu Picchu, you're just
hanging out.
Yeah.
Well, to me that makes me think that also, I mean, that kind of climate and terrain wise that where we are is sort of similar to their sort of natural environment. Is that one of the reasons that having them here in Humboldt kind of seems like a natural place to have llamas live?
I guess so. I'm kind of, they're definitely much easier to keep here than in some of the other places that people keep them. I know that people down south, like in Texas, really struggle because llamas don't do great in the heat.
It's too hot.
Right. So they have to have, I mean, they like shear them twice a year. They have misters like in their barns for misting them and that sort of thing. But they do pretty well in the cold. So there's quite a few ranches in Idaho and Wyoming and Montana. And they the llamas will just, they'll have a nice warm barn there and they'll just sleep out in the snow.
Wow.
'Cause they don't care.
Where do your llamas live? Where is sort of their home base when they're not out adventuring in the woods and on the beach?
Yeah, so we are renting a pasture that is between Arcata and Blue Lake. It's on West End Road. They're on a 4-acre pasture that has a three-sided structure. I don't know exactly the name for it, but yeah, just a three-sided structure. There's also like forest on the pasture. And so they kind of are living the high life as far as llamas go. They have tons of grass that they eat. And so generally it's accepted that you could have about 4 llamas on an acre. So they actually, we could have room to expand to more llamas. And even the woman that we're renting for, I think we had our 4 llamas for, it was like 2 days. And she was like, I'm fine with you getting more llamas. Like you could get more llamas.
So the llamas have been good tenants.
Yes, she likes them. So.
Yeah. Okay. So like, and you said, this is a pretty new thing and like just a few months, right? That you've been up and operating. Yeah. Which month?
So I think as far as tours go, we started accepting in May. So that was just last month.
Okay, so this is a brand new venture that you're doing. Okay.
Yeah. And then okay, so, that we started training them in like March. So
okay. So like this whole, this whole past year when we had, a bit more time in isolation to sit and think about life and the world and our place in it. And you're just sitting there thinking, you know what, when this is all over, I'm gonna llama hard.
Yes, yeah. My COVID project was llamas, I guess.
Okay, yeah. I mean, did the idea of embarking on something out of the norm like this give you something to look forward to, you know, during that time when things were so bleak?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, just in general, I had no idea what I was going to do with my degree.
Yeah. So you got your wildlife degree, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 Well, this is wildlife.
Yes. yeah, it definitely gave me something to look forward to. I would just, yeah, like my partner and I would talk about it. We went on like hikes to scope out good hikes to take the llamas on and stuff. We were just like, oh, I can't wait. Like, can't wait until we get some. And then we had the two, and it was like, I can't wait until we start taking people with us.
And we should mention, like, you know, this business is you and your partner, yeah? Like,
yes. Yeah.
And so how does he, you know, was when you were scheming this, like who was the driving force here? Who was saying, yes, llamas? And who was the person saying, like, I don't know, llamas?
I don't think either of us were. I think we were both very gung-ho.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I think he's very much the dreamer, and I'm very much the person who tries to make it happen.
Okay.
Who, like, looks at the logistics and likes to make lists and be like, all right, we do these steps. And so it's very nice to have him to, because I'll be like, is this idea too crazy? Like, am I just... yeah.
Nah, like, no way. That's I want to play.
Exactly. With yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he's like, no, let's do it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, so now that you're fully up and running here, so let's just say, you know, I'm ready to go on a llama adventure. Maybe you can kind of help guide us a little bit through what that process looks like. Like, when I'm looking up, when I looked on your website, it kind of looked to me like your tours are a little bit more choose your own adventure than some tour companies, some typical tour companies might offer. So do people really get to kind of choose where and when their llama trek will take place?
Yeah, we try to make it as we try to be as flexible as possible for people. So essentially, so if you booked through our website, let's say that you wanted a weekend trip. Mm-hmm. Say you wanted to head out on a Saturday and come back on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then you would tell us when booking the general location that you were thinking. And so you would say, oh, I want to go to the Redwoods. And then you would say how many people are coming along, what kind of trip you'd like, whether you're kind of a, like, what difficulty. So, like, if you really like to climb mountains and that sort of thing versus if you just want some easy hiking. Mm-hmm. And so upon receiving that, I would basically come up with plans of hikes and possible trips, and then I would get back to you and kind of propose them to you, saying that, so this is what is available. Sometimes, especially in the Redwoods State National Parks, there aren't a ton of permit slots for the campsites, and so depending on the date, sometimes I might say, okay, so this isn't available here, there's some other places with redwoods that we could go to, or we could try this different date that's open, that sort of thing.
Sure.
So do you have to get a permit from anybody? Like, is there anywhere the llamas can't go?
So at least right now, they can only go where packs, like where stock is allowed. So often that means horse trails.
Okay.
Which, personally, I think that llamas can go where any human can go, as far as I think their impact is far lower than that of horses.
Sure.
And they're not as, they're not as large as horses. They don't spook as easily. They're very gentle. So it's much easier to, like, if you came across another party, to pass them and that sort of thing. I understand that. I mean, the redwoods particularly are highly, like, protected. It's highly protected habitat, and so they want to protect those trails as much as possible. I kind of hope in the future that if I can establish a good positive relationship with different agencies, that they might in the future allow llamas in some new places, but we'd have to demonstrate that, okay, we've been following all the rules and we've been going on these trails, and our llamas really haven't been as impactful on trails as other stock animals are.
Okay.
Because I was thinking, like, the first people that book a llama trek into Fern Canyon are going to have some pretty good photos. Because as I was saying, is that off limits?
No, I mean, they don't even allow, like, dogs or anything.
You can't take a dog in Fern Canyon? I didn't know that. No. Okay. I guess you're right. I've never seen a dog there. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
You can take llamas on the beaches. So yeah. My idea for if someone really wanted to see Fern Canyon would be to take them with the llamas up to Gold Bluff Beach. And okay, then stop there. This. Yeah, like stop there, stake out the llamas, and then go see Fern Canyon.
Mm. Right, okay. Yeah. What about the backcountry, you know, doing the Trinities and stuff? Is that, do you need llama permits for anything like that?
You just need normal backcountry permits. So the nice thing about the national forests, they have much more flexibility and freedom for where the llamas can go.
Right.
It's funny because, like, in some places, llamas are stock animals lumped in with, like, horses and stuff. In other places, you could technically say they're just a leashed pet, because they are.
They could be both. Yeah. Sure.
There's a lot of anything goes nature to Humboldt. Like, I don't know. Were you around for the Arcata yak people? Do you know about the Arcata?
I've heard about them.
Okay, yeah. you don't want their reputation. They had kind of a surly, at least their reputation was that of surly people that were not as, you know, like, people were pretty entertained when they saw someone walking down the street with a yak and reacted accordingly, but they were not there for those reactions.
Oh, no, I love it when people are excited about the llamas. I just invite people over and, like, come pet them, come. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Well, let's talk about that. You've talked a little bit about, like, these animals' temperaments. But, like, what, so yeah, so what is the llama vibe?
Something that a lot of people say is that if horses are dogs, then llamas are cats.
That's loaded. Pros and cons to that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, because when I first saw that, I mean, I love cats, but when I first heard about that, I was like, what does that mean? Like, so it's more of that llamas, they have their space bubbles that they like. They're not super in your face cuddly. And they won't, like, beg to be pet, but once you pet them, you know they like it.
Okay.
Once you're, particularly their necks, they like to be scratched on their necks area.
Yeah. Necks.
Yes. Yeah. They're very, they like their space. And so they're kind of respectful in that regard. Like, when we first got our llamas, we were worried for a little while, like, oh, they're never going to like us, because they were in a new place and they pretty much ran from us whenever they saw us. And then we finally kind of corralled them up and caught them. And now since we know their favorite treats, when we arrive, the moment we get the bucket out, they come running to us, and then they'll stop about 2 feet away and just, like, wait and look and like stretch out their necks. They're very gentle to people and to kids, which I like. And they're very curious. Part of that, they're all used to dogs because the pasture that they're at has a lot of dogs around it. Especially on Clam Beach, we'll have dogs sometimes run up to us because people aren't expecting llamas to come walking down the beach.
Sure.
And the llamas will just sniff the dog's noses. It's usually the dog that's freaked out by the llamas and not the other way around.
Great.
And the same with horses. Usually horses are like, what is that? And freak out a little. And the llamas are just, they might kind of take a couple steps back, but then they kind of, they figure it out and then they're just curious.
Oh. When you talk about training them earlier, I mean, is that, since it seems like they're just sort of very mellow creatures, what exactly goes into to training these llamas? Is it more about, is it about the socialization and getting them used to people and carrying the equipment, or?
So part of training, so as far as, there's kind of different phases, and the first is like halter training, and that's getting them to accept having a halter put on them and understanding what the pressure means, because I mean a halter is really a way of communicating with the animal, and so are now they're kind of used to, okay, if we have a halter on, that means we're doing something, we're working, we're going to stand here, instead of like, okay, it's time to romp around and that sort of thing. And I mean, we've also, like, I guess well-adjusted llamas are mellow. So there's also just that of getting them to accept that people are friendly, aren't going to hurt them and that sort of thing. I mean, we've definitely built up a lot of trust with the llamas where they, for a while, they wouldn't like accept food out of our hands, that sort of thing, and getting them to accept that. The next kind of stage of packing is getting them used to packs on them and desensitized to all sorts of objects that would normally be scary. They are prey animals, and similar to like other livestock, new objects can be a possible threat. So we kind of waved like coats and flags and all sorts of stuff around them and kind of encouraged them to be calm, and put the packs on their back. And that's like a new feeling. And then the next step of training, which pretty much we're on this step, is just building up their muscle. So like humans, you kind of have to train to go backpacking to carry all that weight on your back. And so we're adding weight to them, taking them on longer and longer walks, so that they build up the muscle and the stamina.
You got some buff llamas now.
Yes. Yeah.
So Keegan, this with this next part, you just gotta go for it. I can't be shy with this. Like I don't think that most people know what a llama sounds like. What I need you to do is I need you to give me your best llama sound impression.
Oh my gosh. My husband's way better at this than I am.
Well, he's not here to save you now.
Yeah.
So they make quite a few noises, but the main noise they make is humming. And that's just kind of
okay.
That's it. Okay. That's the sound. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I was reading something about like that they also have like a warning.
An alarm call. I don't know if I can fit, like, I don't know if my vocal cords can do that. I'm trying to think of what it sounds like.
I think you're gonna have to get good at this, right? Like, I won't be the last person to ask you to do it.
I know. I just don't hear. I don't hear the alarm call very often.
That's a good. That's a probably a good thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like.
Yes. Okay. Exactly. Yeah,
perfect.
Like, A plus.
Like that. Yeah. Okay. Kind of. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Do they make a happy sound? Like when you're giving them a treat or a neck scratch? Do these cats cat-like creatures purr? No. Okay.
No, because like cats, they are also kind of indifferent.
Right. Okay. Yes. So how can you tell when a llama is happy?
I mean, humming isn't always a bad sound. I think part of it is just their ears. So their ears are expressive. If they pinned their ears, it means they're upset. And if they're forward, you can't see in the call. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there it is.
Forward, that's kind of either inquisitive or just like, you know, happy. And then there, I guess it's pretty subtle. Like now it's like I can look at their eyes and I can kind of tell, because like they'll soften their eyes. When they're happy or relaxed, and then their lips, like they'll like hold a lot of tension in their lips when they're kind of stressed, and then they'll like relax them when they're, and then also like they'll lean into the scratches. Like if you're scratching them in a good spot on their neck, they like lean into it. And
yeah. Body language.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, it's mostly body language.
For them. Happy. One of the other things that you had mentioned before was that you're also trying to get these kind of, you know, maybe llama visits going. I saw that there are some other services that you're offering, like maybe if a person isn't up for a full llama trek, but they just want to experience the joy of being around a llama, that maybe they can book a llama for their event.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's just anything.
Steph, I think the question that Steph doesn't know that she wants to ask is like, what if there was a person who was having a wedding and they and they wanted to maybe, you know, spice it up a little bit. They wanted to make it a little, you know, i.e. Steph's wedding that will happen at some point. Like what would the llama wedding experience be like?
Yeah. So we'd probably bring they like buddies and that sort of thing. And then for that kind of event, we would try to coordinate with you to see if we could dress them up in a way that is fitting for the theme. So, you know, like possibly like little flower crowns or like hats or whatnot.
Oh, okay. I was like, do you have a collection of llama costumes?
Yeah.
A llama costume tuxedo closet? Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. You can drape things like on their backs and around their necks and that sort of thing. I mean, the traditional like Peruvian garb for llamas, like they would dress up their llamas for festivals and events. I mean, they still do. And so they can be very handsome.
Ooh, I feel like I'm going to do a Google image search deep dive on Peruvian llama wear.
Yeah.
I think for a wedding, it would probably be like, we'd bring the llamas for an hour and for pictures, and then for people to feed them and pet their necks and that sort of thing. Hang out with the llamas and possibly get llama kisses.
Would you say llama kisses?
Llama kisses, possibly. Yeah. Yeah. If they like you, they'll give you kisses. Yeah. Could they maybe be a part of the ceremony? Like, could they walk down the? Llamas down the aisle? Or
yeah, they're pretty easy to lead. So like anyone, they could be led. They could be led down the aisle if that was something that someone wanted. Yeah.
Yeah, llama ring bearer. Yeah.
I don't know.
There you go.
Were there llamas at you and your partner's wedding? That's.
We had a backyard COVID wedding.
Okay.
So, we're actually planning to have like in not this year, but the next year, to have like a celebration of like the wedding we couldn't have sort of thing.
And oh, I think that's, we
plan on having llamas there.
Well, at this point,
I would think so. Yeah.
They're part of your, they're part of your wedding party. I mean, they're
exactly.
They're your family.
They are. Yeah.
So a couple of other things that I saw that you offer too, is that you, you sell, you're selling the llama fiber as well. And then llama beans.
Yes.
Which is basically dried llama poop. Is that?
Yes. Yes, it's llama poop.
And now why would somebody want to buy dried llama poop?
So llama poop is great as a fertilizer, like a natural fertilizer. So you could either just spread the manure like on your garden, put it in your compost pile, or I know that some people make like compost tea using the beans.
Right.
Okay.
Just soak them in water and then use the water to water their plants with occasionally.
Oh. All right. Good to
know. And I had put out a listing like on Craigslist of llama manure, and I had quite a few people like interested. Although one person wanted like over 100 pounds of it, and I had to admit, like, I only have 4 llamas right now.
They don't poop that much. We do not
have 100 pounds of
it. You were ready for it.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but they do. So one kind of fun thing about llamas is they have communal dung piles. So instead of
they all poop in the same spot.
Yes, yeah, they do.
I mean, humans do that too. So I mean,
yeah,
I guess that's true. Yeah, that's
So we have like one. There's one big spot. That's the place they all go. It's like the spot where after we are done walking them and we like take off their halters and everything, they always go straight there. And they go to the bathroom.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, that checks out. Yeah.
Yep. And so it's very, the nice thing is it makes it very easy to clean up after them and to gather the manure because we just know where the spots are and we just go. They have a couple because it's 4 acres.
Right.
You don't want to go across the whole field, but
yeah. that's very cute. I didn't know that about llamas.
Yeah.
And I'm embarrassed that we've gotten this deep into this before we asked that, but you have 4 llamas. We have not asked their names yet.
Oh yes.
Yeah, gosh.
And that is a failing on
so rude. Please don't my tell part. The llamas that
yeah.
we were so
oh yeah. I don't know. They might listen to the podcast. but so we have Tango, we have Axelrod, who we just call Axel. We have Bon Bon. And then we have Angel Eyes, who we just call Angel.
Okay.
Yes.
These are cute llama names. And
yes, all of them were named before they arrived.
And you kept their names. Okay. Yeah. And they're all males, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Is there a reason for that or?
So llamas will, even when they're gelded, will try to mate like all the time if they can, and there's a possibility of injuring one another.
And so
it's preferable to at least keep them separated, and since we only have one pasture right now, we want to just stick with one sex, and it was just that males became available first, so we went with males. And None of them are fixed right now. None of them are gelded. They are a little more feisty with one another, but for the most part, it hasn't really been an issue.
Okay. There's another thing that I read about, and this was the first time I had heard about it on your blog, and I feel like we should talk about a little bit, was you referencing that the llamas, specifically their nanobodies, have been used in some research for potential COVID-19 treatments. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. That was just a recent blog post I wrote. So llamas produce all camelids. So camelids is like the family that llamas are in. They're related to camels. And so they all produce an extra type of antibody called a nanobody. It's called that because it's small. It's about half the size of a human antibody. And they are particularly good at attaching themselves to the proteins on the surface of viruses. And so with the coronavirus, I mean, the corona, the crown part, is named because it has all those spikies on the surface of it that help it invade cells. And so what scientists were thinking was that they could possibly create a treatment that involved these nanobodies, because the nanobodies are very good, are very effective at attaching to these proteins to, and basically it stops them from invading cells. And so the researchers were already, like, I think it started in 2016. They were already doing research just in general on like the on SARS. So just the kind of general group that the coronavirus that we're currently dealing with falls under. And so they were already basically injecting into these llamas the proteins that would be found on the virus, but not the actual viruses themselves. And then collecting the nanobodies and seeing what viruses the nanobodies are effective against. And they found one that was effective against the current coronavirus. And so now there's further research being done to try and generate more nanobodies that that are effective possibly against the current coronavirus, and then possibly turning that into a treatment that could then be given to humans and taken into the human immune system, and then our immune system would use that against the coronavirus. And so it's cool research. Some of the pros, not to cut you off,
Oh,
some of the
no,
pros,
please.
they're so small. Nanobodies are so small, they could be aerosolized, so they can be breathed in like through your nose, so you wouldn't have to have like a shot. And then also it could be, since you're not like introducing something that the immune system has to fight against, people who are immunocompromised could possibly benefit from the treatment, because it's basically just giving them more antibodies like against something rather than forcing their body to produce more antibodies, if that makes sense.
So to sum up, what you're saying is that petting a llama is as good as getting a vaccine against coronavirus, right? That's basically
No,
no. Okay, no, yeah,
not
no.
put me on that.
I just wanted to follow in the footsteps of giving bad COVID-19 information on a podcast. That's kind of a thing that people do. So no, I that was all. Yeah, I just
But our cool friendly llama
hilarious.
friends could potentially also be a part of some future
Yes.
COVID-19 treatments.
Yeah, it's possible.
I feel like do I have to put a disclaimer on me being a dummy? Sorry,
I think you
I'm
just
just
did.
okay.
Yeah,
Okay,
you
great. Yeah.
did.
Okay,
You're
great.
a dummy, and
Yeah.
we shouldn't believe things that you
Yeah.
say.
Do not come here for llama
But
or COVID advice.
I do think that that petting a llama and hanging out with these llamas in nature does seem like it can be an effective treatment for other ailments, such as the blues. So,
Bad case of the blues.
it has its benefits.
I'm always happier after I see them.
Well, cool. Like we're getting near our time. And I so we really appreciate you taking the time to come and share your llama passion. Is there anything else that you wanted to get out to the community? I mean, obviously, if people are interested in booking a llama adventure, you can go to lunaslamaadventures.com, or you can find you on Instagram and Facebook, I'm sure.
Yes.
I don't know, anything else that you wanted to add or get out into the world?
Oh, I just wanted to address that we often get the question of, do llamas spit? And I just wanted to say that llamas do spit, but they spit at one another.
Okay. You have never been the victim of llama spit.
I have.
You have? Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So I have, because I've been in the middle of it.
Okay. Crossfire.
If you get in the middle, if you get in between two llamas during a llama argument, then you're going to get spit on.
Well, I mean, that's.
That's on you.
Yeah. Yes, it was on me. It was one of those things where, yeah, Angel was in the middle of spitting on someone else, and I pulled his head away, and it just happened that I pulled his head straight towards me, and he just spit right in my face, and it was the worst.
Right. But now you have those llama antibodies, nanobodies, you are immune to.
No, there see, you're going down a dark path too, Steph. You can't be doing this. Yeah.
That is really funny to me that that's like people's burning question about llamas, though. It's not even something I thought about, but of course
they're a camelid.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, yeah. Which have that spitting reputation. Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. Keegan Trisham, Luna's Llama Adventures. We thank you, and I hope to see some llamas out in the natural settings of Humboldt in the coming months and years.
Thank you so much, I can't wait to check it out. It's a very cool unique thing, and thanks for sharing the story and telling us more about it.
Sure, thank you very much.
All right, Llamarama has concluded. Stephanie, what did you learn?
I learned that llamas make this sound.
Yeah.
And they're really friendly creatures, so we're told. Just make sure that you do not get in between two of them when they are in an argument and having a spitting match.
Yeah, they got to work that out amongst their own.
Yes, yeah. Llama politics are very complex.
So. As are all. Anyway, so that's it. We'll be back next week with more amazing conversations. Be safe out there. Get vaccinated if you haven't already. It's going to make your life a whole bunch easier. I'm just a person on a podcast saying it. Dolly Parton said you should get vaccinated. So there you go.